This is Finally Alive Radio, where we discuss God, relationships, and you. Visit us at finallyaliveradio.com. That's finallyaliveradio.com. Now, let's listen to Gary Aris.
So we've been talking about food laws, as fun as that is. But our reasoning behind talking about food laws isn't for the sake of food laws. It isn't for the sake of the old commandment laws, though we respect them, obviously, because it is God's. But I'm hoping to get across what God actually thinks. That's the whole point of this. If we can understand why God's doing what he's doing, why God is giving these commands to his people, perhaps we can understand God a little bit better. That's the hope here. So we want to understand his patterns. So I guess what we're going to do today is kind of a quick recap here. We saw there's a connection there with the clean, unclean, with holy and unholy, and also with life and death. So there's correlation kind of going through all the way through when we talk about this clean and unclean thing. So what I want to do is I want to look at some correlations. Again, this is all to understand God, perhaps finding even patterns, you know, in the Bible. So let's go to Genesis 1. We didn't read anything out of Leviticus. I think we've done enough of that, but we'll come back to it. And this is maybe some stuff that you've noticed or heard about before. And it'll all connect to Leviticus, and you'll see how that works by the end of this. So Genesis 1, verse 1, you know, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. Verse 2, the earth was without form and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. So there's an issue here. We have the without form, okay? Formless, right? And the void. I think that's an important piece here, which we'll connect later on to Leviticus. There's something that is lacking, okay? Let's kind of keep that in the back of your mind there. But more importantly here, verse 3, and God said, let there be light, and there was light, and God saw the light was good. God separated the light from the darkness. And that's what we want to look at. We want to keep in mind here that word separate. Okay, this is going to be an important word. So verse 4, right? And God separated the light from the darkness. Verse 5, God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day. Verse 6, God said, let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters, and let it separate the waters. Again, that badal, from the waters. Verse 7, and God made the expanse and separated the waters that were under the expanse from the waters that were above the expanse, and it was so. And God called the expanse heaven, and there was evening, and there was morning, the second day. So it all starts off with a separation, right? That's what we have there in the first 2 days. So verse 9, and God said, let the waters under the heavens be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear. And it was so. God called the dry land earth, and the waters that were gathered together, he called seas, and God saw that it was good. So I know you've read this many a times, but there's still a separation, right? He's still kind of doing that, but now what we're going to see is he's going to start to fill his land, right? So I'll just put the word fill just for the sake of the contrast there. The separating, and then we have the contrast of filling here. The creation process starts off with separating, okay? That's an important piece here. And then we have the filling part here. So, and not to go too far into this, but let's see here. Where did we stop? We ended at 10? Or was it 9? It was 9. Okay. And it was so, verse 10, God called the dry land earth, and the waters that were gathered together he called seas, and God saw that it was good. Verse 11, and God said, let the earth sprout vegetation, plants yielding seed, and fruit trees bearing fruit in which is their seed, each according to its kind on the earth, and it was so. So now we have filling, right? Now he's doing something with this creation. After he's separated, now he's doing something with this creation. Verse 12, and the earth brought forth vegetation, on and on about the vegetation. We don't want to go too far into that. But looking at verse 20, God said, let the waters swarm with the swarms of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth, across the expanse of the heavens. So God created the sea creatures, and every living creature that moves, with which the waters swarm according to their kinds, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. So now we have sea creatures, right? Fish and birds. Verse 24. says, and God said, let the earth bring forth living creatures according to their kinds, livestock and creeping things, and beasts of the earth according to their kinds. And it was so. Verse 25, and God made the beasts of the earth according to their kinds, and the livestock according to their kinds, and everything that creeps on the ground according to its kind. So we have, as you can see right there, right? So we have the fish, and then we have the birds, and then we have, we'll call them land animals, and then we have the creeping things. All right, there's your breakdown. That's everything right there. So notice God breaks down everything. Everything has a category and how everything works. And we also have the breakdown of sea, land, and sky. All right, whole bunch of categories. Obvious, right? Nothing new there, right? And then the finale here is Genesis chapter 2. Again, this is all stuff that you guys know, but what we're trying to do is we're trying to see, you know, some categories here, right? So chapter 2, verse 1, thus the heavens and the earth were finished and all the host of them. And on the seventh day, God finished his work that he had done. And he rested on the seventh day for all his work that he had done. So God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it, God rested from all his work that he had done in creation. So all of this ends with holy, all right? Because God is holy, seventh day is holy. So a very important piece there. And all to connect, okay? Just again, a little bit of gestalting, but holy, okay? You see what's going on there? There are some connections, and we'll keep pushing through. So now let's go to Leviticus 11. What we have to think about here is God is talking to a people who came out of Egypt, right? Well, they're the generation that came out of the second generation, right? That basically come out of Egypt, right? The first generation, they're dead. Second generation. But they know the stories. They know the Old Testament Genesis story. They're going to know Genesis 1. So they're going to see that there are these kind of categories here. They're okay, obviously, a fish, bird, land animals, creeping, swarming things, sea, land, sky. They're going to realize. And then for us, chapter 2, okay, then there's this holy thing, this holy day. They know these things, okay? On top of that, there had to have been talks. I'll put it that way. There had to have been talks of the Egyptian gods. There has to be that kind of talk. I mean, they did live there for many, many years. So they do know, at least by story from their parents, perhaps, that there are these other gods. But this God's going to be different, right? And that's the whole big thing here. So a little background there. So Leviticus 11, what we're going to see here is a similar pattern. Verse 1, and the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying to them, speak to the people of Israel, saying, these are the living things that you may eat among all the animals that are on the earth. Whatever part of the hoof and is cloven-footed and chew the cud among the animals, you may eat. Nevertheless, among these that chew the cud or part the hoof, you shall not eat these. The camel, because it chews the cud, but it does not part the hoof, is unclean to you. And the rock badger, on and on, all these different animals here. But we're reading them because I want you to notice what kind of animals they are. Verse 6, and the hare, or the rabbits, because it chews the cud, but does not part the hoof. So what kind of animals thus far are we seeing here? Swimming things? Swarming things? No, we see the land animals, right? So we're seeing land here. So we saw fish, birds, we saw land animals. So here, we see the land animals. If you skip to verse 26 through 29, and we don't have to read them, but I want you to know, 26 through 29, and then again 39 to 40, he talks about land animals again. Back to what we're talking about, clean and unclean. I don't want to read all of them, but I just want you just to note there. Then we go to verse 9, okay? These you may eat of all that are in the waters. Everything in the waters that has fins and scales, whether in the seas or in the rivers, you may eat. But anything in the seas or the rivers that does not have fins, scales, or swarming creatures in the waters and of the living creatures that are in the waters is detestable to you. Big thing. And there it is, okay? The sea, the land, we covered those, we covered that. Land animals, all covered. So let's see, let's go to verse 13. I'm flying through these. We don't have to read all of them, but just to see the patterns. Verse 13, and these you shall detest among the birds, they shall not be eaten. They are detestable, the eagle, the bearded vulture, the black vulture, the kite, the falcon of any kind, every raven of any kind, ostrich, a whole list of birds, right? All the birdies. So certain birdies you cannot eat. Certain ones are clean, unclean. So we got fish, we got birds, we got the sky here. And all the way down to verse 19, the stork, the heron, the hoopoe, and the bat. Okay, no bats. Can't eat bats, guys. Sorry. People still eat bat? Is that still a thing? All right, verse 31. These are unclean to you among all that swarm. Whoever touches them when they are dead shall be unclean until the evening, and anything on which any of them falls when they are dead shall be unclean, whether it is an article of wood or a garment. So, long story short, we have the swarming things now, right? So, looking at this, okay, we covered exactly what was in Genesis 1. Breakdown, there it is, right? A little bit different order, sure. That's I'll say that for you. But what do you think these people who are now saved, right, second generation, coming out of, the wilderness, coming into a new land, what do you think they're thinking? They have to see this pattern. Okay, well, this is how God did this. We know the pattern. They know it probably by heart, right? I mean, it was an oral tradition, right? What is happening here when they're seeing, because, and I'm going to keep going with this here, seeing that God breaks down yet again, in a weird way, kind of a separation here. I'm separating certain things. In the beginning, he separates what? Certain things from certain things, right? First 2 days. And now he's doing it again. What is going on here? So just stuff to think about here. So that brings me back to the creation. What is creation? We think of, okay, creating, inventing something, right? But let me read this to you. So creation is the establishment of order. So God sets boundaries, and the creation is expected to keep them. That's the way it works. I forgot where it says it. I want to say it's in Psalms, right? I think David says it. You allow the wave to come so far, right? Who does that? Well, God set the boundaries. So that's what part of creation was, is not just inventing something, but also creating boundaries. This is what you can do. And I think we covered this when we were talking Hebrew stuff. Plants start being a plant, you know, sun, be a sun, you know, start sunning, if we can use it like that way, right? Moon, do the moon thing, right? So that's the whole thing here with creation. There is an order, it's an established order, and the order, the one who is making, creating the order, is also establishing boundaries. And that's what we're seeing. And what do we see here? The exact same thing. We're seeing some set boundaries within the creation. So it's a minified separation process here going on, right? He's using the same pattern he uses in Genesis 1 with a separating type of strategy, right? In this case, he's using it in the sense of clean versus unclean. And then what is he doing it with? Obviously with his filling strategy, right? With the second part of what we talked about. He's got the separating onto the filling, the created animals. But this time he's separating what? Not the heavens and the earth, but rather holy and the unholy. So it gets a lot deeper. It gets a lot bigger. So there's this weird pattern that goes on from Genesis 1 with his creation to now this. And we have to realize, we have to do our best to look at it from their perspective, like, oh my goodness, it's kind of happening again, but not literally the creation of the world. But there's something new happening here. And that's exactly what it is. He's separating something new. And we read all those verses on, well, even the brick, even the coal that was used, you can't just use any old coal. There's God stuff, and then there's everything else. That's a big thing with God. Separating, making things exclusive is a big thing for God. And that's exactly what he did from the beginning. He's separating things on a general level, right? But then stuff gets real serious, doesn't it, by this time? The entire Leviticus stuff gets real serious. What's interesting is that word badal that I wrote down over there, separating. That word is used 5 times in Genesis 1. All right, 6 more times in the book of Leviticus, making it 11 times, right? Now, in all 5 books, the Pentateuch, it's only used 20 times. It's interesting, I don't know if this is if this makes sense to you, but it's interesting that that specific word, separating, is used 11 times out of 20 in one verse and then one book. And in Leviticus, it's only, I said, what, 6 times? It's only used 6 times. So it's an interesting thing that in the total thing here, in the total picture here, 20 times, 11 times it's used here. So separating, there must be a specific reason or a very important reason. And they typically, the other part to this, that word badal, it's in the hifil. And hifil is, you guys remember hifil? Did we even cover hifil? I don't remember if we did. Causative. So it was God causing, it was God doing, right? He was causing. So what does that mean if God was separating in the hifil form? Okay, a little recap for everybody here. Causative, causing, God causing this. Think about that. It's very, very purposeful, isn't it? It's not just, oh, I'm just kind of doing this passively. No. It's very, very on purpose. There's an intention with this when God is doing this. He's being very, very specific in his actions here. Can we say that he wanted this to happen if he's causing it to happen? Is that fair to say? So he's very active and involved in his process originally, and then now very, very involved in this separating of the holy and the unholy. Kind of a weird thought that ran through my mind is, isn't that what God still does to us? Here you are, you get saved, and what happens next? Suddenly you're separated. A lot of times you're separated from your friends that you grew up with, people that you know, or you try to make a friendship with someone for some reason that just doesn't work, but it used to before I was BC, right? Before Christian, right? Those types of things happen. What's going on there? It's the same process. God is separating you for whatever purpose, right? For his purpose, obviously. But your specific purpose, whatever your aspect of life, your aspect of ministry is. I think that's an interesting thing that we still see happen to this day. God still separates, clean and unclean, you understand, but he still separates his holy. For what? For life. It's all the same thing, clean and unclean, you know, holy and unholy, life and death. We speak life when we speak the gospel. We're speaking life into this dying world. It's kind of weird that the patterns are still there to this day. It's just in different ways. And it's a typical prayer that any of us would have is, God, why did you shut this door? God, why did you get me fired? Or whatever the case. Why did this tragedy or this bad thing happen? He's pulling you out of something that you're not supposed to be in, or there's a different direction he wants you to go. That's exactly what he did here with these guys. There's a certain direction I want you guys to go. It's not the wrong way. It's the right way. It's my way. God's way. That's exactly what he does. And that's the whole thing. When God is doing these things to us, it's happening for a reason. There is a bigger picture. There is a reason why doors close. There is a reason why the negative things have happened in our lives. So be it. But there is a bigger picture. Take a look at verse 44. What's interesting is this chapter ends on this note. So we have the verse 43, you shall not make yourself detestable, on and on. Verse 44, for I am the Lord your God. Consecrate yourselves, therefore, and be holy, for I am holy. It ends on the same note, on holiness. He goes through his categories, and then he ends on holiness in the same chapter. It's kind of a weird connection there. You shall not defile yourselves with any swarming thing that crawls on the ground, for I am the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt to be your God. You shall therefore be holy, for I am holy. There's your repetition two times. That means it's very important. This is the law about beasts and birds, every living creature, on and on. But notice how he ends it. I think that's just kind of interesting that, well, wait a minute, the way you start off the book, Genesis, has this weird correlation. Is God saying something to these people? I'm not trying to get weird on you guys, but look at these interesting correlations. Why is this word Badal only used just a few times and we hit most of them already in our message today? Separating is very important for God. You are separated for God's purpose. Holiness seems to be a very big deal, right? I mean, you understand I'm saying that in a rhetorical way. There's this weird thing about separation. There's certain things you can and can't do when it comes to God. And it makes perfect sense. He wants you to go the right way. He doesn't. Even the tree of knowledge, right? It wasn't just a random thing to try to tempt you. God has a purpose for everything. That's just the way it is. Right? He doesn't just do random things. That's Satan. Satan does random things. God doesn't. Everything he does is very, very purposeful. For the life of me, I must not have written this down, but I'll give you what I remember. But basically, it's back to our message of imaging God, right? If we are imagers of God, and that was his original intent, we are made in the image of God, and here we are, imagers. The way he ends there in verse 44, consecrate yourselves, therefore, and be holy, for I am holy. What is he saying? Be holy, be sinless? No, that's what I'm trying to separate us from. I'm trying to separate us from that idea to be a good little boy and good little girls, right? No, not the point. Point being is that if you're going to be imagers, imagers in those days, you get to choose or separate the way God does, but under his boundaries, right? Here are the rules. This is clean. This is unclean. Now be holy like I am holy. Basically, you go start doing what I told you to do and replicate me. Because if you pick the holy thing, if you pick the clean thing, if you pick the thing of life, you're replicating me. because we're representatives, right? What is he trying to do? It's that connection again, back to that image of God thing, right? I want you guys to see this aspect. Remember, this is pre-Jesus, right? So that makes it, it's hard for us to look back. It's almost like us looking back and saying, oh my gosh, you're using a rotary phone. Good God, help me. Where here we are, call whoever, right? You can just speak into your phone and you know it does it for you. That's such a bad analogy, but I hope that makes sense. We live under grace, and it's so hard to like look back and it's like, oh God, help us, right? Because you're going so far. Forget the rotary phone. Oh my gosh, this is like almost like chiseling into the rock when I can just send you an email, right? By saying it into my phone, right? It's so hard to do, but I think it's important to see from their perspective and why it was impossible. Think about it. You're supposed to image God. Did they? No. They failed. And it got so bad that they begin to put the law above God, above the lawgiver. That's what ends up happening, right? In fact, when we see Jesus' day, what happens? He's getting beat up for laws that weren't even in the law, right? They had their own traditions, right? They had even fence laws, right? And here's Jesus, like, that's not even God's law. You say, but I say this. You say this, but I say this. Why does he say that? Because they lost sight of God. When they were supposed to be imaging God, and it was impossible. So it was all about them being able to image God, to be able to choose the way God does in the boundary that God gave them, which is here's the clean, here's the unclean. Does that make sense? And we could even see what churches have done. You know, you separate yourself so far as people that that it's come to the point where now don't sin. And if you sin, you know, if you have a drink or something, oh, you must, whatever, right? Fill in the blank, right? You can't have communion in some churches. You know, now we have the bishops over there in Kazakhstan where they deny communion to people who are divorced and remarried. I'm just thinking to myself, how do you get that choice? I mean, okay, fine, you're a man of authority, but you're also supposed to be the shepherd under the shepherd, right? That's you're not the authority, you're an authority. God's given you authority, but that's where it ends. You don't change the rules. You can't just go into the game book and start saying, well, we want to do it this way. Okay, and I even said this, good intentions, fine, I get it. They don't like divorce. I hate divorce too, but you cannot say you can't have communion. That is crazy. That's crazy talk. How do you deny the same thing that saves you? Grace, right? Jesus, right? It's not the communion, but you understand the representation of it. That is insanity. But it's no different than what the Israelites did. They took the law of God and made the law of God, God, instead of the other way around, right? That's the problem. But trying to go back to hopefully the original idea of what God was trying to do here is that just showing you guys, look, separate yourselves and now you do this. You image me. You will probably run into people somehow, some way, somewhere in life where they will tell you about the laws that you must keep if you're a Christian. I want you to be prepared, and that's the whole thing with all this. So if you can know this in detail, I'm not saying you have to go and recite all these things, but at least if you get the idea of what's really happening, what God's real intent was with the clean and unclean animals, it wasn't about being a bad little boy. It was about, no, there's a purpose here. I want you to image me. There's a difference between holy and unholy, right? And that's it.
Thank you for listening to Finally Alive Radio. If God has touched your heart with any part of today's message, let Gary know by contacting him on finallyaliveradio.com. Would you like to download this episode for free? Now you can. finallyaliveradio.com has every episode ready for download absolutely free. We'll meet you again next time when we look at God's Word with your very own Christian counselor, Gary Aris, and learn how to finally be alive in Christ.